Welcome to Chasing Patience, a podcast about navigating through our infertility by speaking out, helping others, and understanding the journey.
Hello, and welcome to Chasing Patience, Episode 2. I am Shane.
And I'm Nico.
And thank you so much for all the words that we've gotten about listening to the first episode. We had a good review at iTunes over there. So first off, just want to say if you want to help support the show and help it grow and spread it out and everything like that, then please give us a five-star rating and review. Really help kind of get the podcast out there and help others who are going through this to listen to what we have to say, and hopefully it helps them out. And we also have other ways that you can reach out to us. All those links will be in the description, but you can message us at Instagram over at the Chasing Patience Instagram page or our individual Instagram pages. You can also email us at chasingpatientspodcast@gmail.com. And again, all those will be in the description. So in case, you know, you don't know where to find it or whatever.
Yeah. Don't be shy to reach out if you need someone to talk to, because I know how isolating it can be, especially in the beginning. Cause you feel like, I don't know who to talk to because nobody can relate to this, or at least like, since people don't really talk about it that much, you don't even know if anybody else is going through it.
Yeah, it definitely helped me for sure. So, you know, I know if it'll help me, then it'll definitely help you. So, with that out of the way, we just want to get right into the topic that we're going to talk about for this episode.
Oh, I thought we were going to give a little update.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Go ahead.
So we're just going to give you a little update on our IVF journey. We're doing a second egg retrieval procedure in October. So hopefully that one will be better than the last one.
Yeah.
We're going to be a lot more prepared this time, and definitely eating healthier.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we were eating pretty healthy the last time, but this time we're really going to
cut out gluten. Yeah. I already don't eat dairy, so that's not a problem. But the main thing is that I need to cut down on my sugar because I don't know if it's because of lockdown or whatever. But like whenever the coronavirus hit, the bread baking and the, you know, baking sweets and everything really took off. So I really need to cut back and kind of, you know, eat healthier because I'm getting that sugar addiction again.
Yeah. I mean, with cereal is the main culprit, or at least
right now. Sure, I cut out bread. But I can't get rid of the cereal. I really like the honey nut Cheerios. Yeah. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that, you know, but again, you know, more waiting.
I know. That's why we're chasing patience.
Yeah.
Get it?
Sure, yeah.
Anyway.
With that, now we can finally get into the topic that we're going to talk about. And this is kind of we're going to try and do our best to kind of just progress with, I guess, each stage. But I'm sure we'll have some detours along the way or whatever with our episode order or whatever. But for this episode, we were going to talk about the specific tests that you take kind of at the beginning. You know, so of course, for the men, you do a semen analysis, and then, you know, the women do their thing.
Yeah, we kind of just wanted to go through all the process of testing, because a lot of the time you can't even get any of these tests until you've been trying for a year.
Yeah.
Like a lot of your doctors will say like, oh, I can't recommend you take this test until after you tried for a year, or your insurance won't cover it until you've been trying for a year, blah, blah, blah. But one thing that bothered me was, why aren't we figuring this stuff out before so that we can have peace of mind and treat something that could be going wrong? Because a lot of people, even if they're having normal cycles, or if you're a man, you think that everything is all normal, like not having any hormonal problems or anything like that, that are visible in your everyday life. Sometimes things could be off and you could waste that whole year of trying and not know that anything's wrong. And that's kind of how I felt when we started. It's not to say that you assume that you're infertile. Like, don't do that, because you're going to get stressed out. But I think it would be good to have a baseline to make sure that you're healthy. So I remember right after we got married, some of the first things that we did was we just went to get a regular blood panel,
mm-hmm.
like vitamin levels, cholesterol, things like that. And I think that's a good starting point, because you can tell if you're deficient in something, or if you are, you know, you have a tendency towards type 2 diabetes or something like that.
Right.
Especially like for those problems, you want to get those things at least as fixed as you can before you start trying, because you don't want to run into any health issues later.
Yeah, it's good to know about all that stuff beforehand, because it'll kind of maybe give you some sort of baseline, I guess, in terms of, yeah, like you were saying.
Are you healthy?
Yeah, basically. Are you healthy? You know, so are you suffering from, or maybe you're possibly suffering from, you know, pre-diabetes or whatever, or high blood pressure or high cholesterol or something like that.
Yeah, and you want to get that fixed before you start trying, because it can affect the development of the baby. Especially yeah. like low vitamin D and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the other thing that you may have to press your doctors for, if you go to a gynecologist or like an OB, then you may have to press them to get certain tests done. They're more likely to let you have those tests if you have a cycle problem. So you may want to start cycle tracking at least for 3 months before you start trying. You can use either, there's a couple apps that you could use. There's a couple of free ones like Flow that you can get on the App Store for free. And basically what you do is you track every day symptoms that you have. And then you also track like when you get your period and when the new cycle starts. But there are more advanced apps called like Natural Cycles and even the Ava bracelet. Those ones are Ava is really expensive, but it's worth it if you're not good with taking your temperature every morning, because it will take your temperature throughout the night, because it's just a bracelet that you wear. But if you're okay with just waking up every morning and taking your temperature with a basal body thermometer, then I recommend Natural Cycles app. Because basically what you do is you take your temperature as soon as you wake up every morning and you log it into the app along with your symptoms and like when you get your period, and it will tell you if your cycles are regular, basically. Another thing you can do is you can track your ovulation by taking OPK tests, which are basically, you know, like in pregnancy tests, you pee on it and you wait. It's almost the same thing. It's an LH test to test if LH is high in your blood or in your system that day, because a couple days before you ovulate, your LH hormone will surge, and that's how you can tell if, or it's one of the ways you can tell if you're ovulating regularly. And then the last way that you can tell if you're ovulating regularly is if you track your cervical mucus. And you can do all of these things and put them into the app, and it will make your readings more accurate. But if you track your cervical mucus should be like egg whites around the time in your ovulation window. So using all those methods can help you determine whether your cycle is regular. And if your cycle is between, like, I think it was 28 to 35 days, pretty sure it's 28 to 35 days, then you're considered regular. But if it's over that amount, then you may be having anovulatory cycles, meaning you're not ovulating, which, of course, if you're not ovulating, then you can't get pregnant because there's no egg there.
Right.
So those are just some clues that you can get from tracking. Oh my gosh, I can't talk. From tracking your cycle. So if you come to your doctor with that information, then they're more likely to take you seriously, I think, because like a lot of the times when I would go to my, I don't know if it's just my OB's office, but I saw like multiple doctors there and nobody would take me seriously when I wanted these tests.
They would give you the side eye or something like that.
Yeah. They'd be like, why do you want to know? Like you're young. Isn't that kind of
crazy though, that you want those type of tests, but the people who are supposed to be like the experts on this, there's just like, wait, what, why would you, you know, it's almost as if you know more than they do in terms of that aspect.
Well, it's kind of like they don't want to deal with it because they're like, no, we only deal with like when you have an issue or when you're pregnant or something. Yeah. But I think prevention is better than, you know, treating it. So.
Yeah, because when you get to the treating part, it could be too late.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the first thing that you would want to do is if you're having regular cycles and you've been tracking it and you're having regular cycles, then that's a good indication that you're probably fine. Probably. There's a, what was it? Like you said 1 in 8 or was it 1 in 7 now?
Yeah. I've heard 1 in 8, 1 in 7.
So yeah. There's a pretty good chance that you're fine if your cycles are regular and you can confirm that you're ovulating.
Mm-hmm.
So the easiest thing to do would be to get a semen analysis test for your partner. Just to get that out of the way, you know? And if it's not covered by insurance, it's usually between like $70 to $100.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah.
You can get it done at a lab. You may have to do some research and go to like a fertility lab or something like that. But we were able to do it for $70. And I just, when we did it, I wanted to get it out of the way for peace of mind, even though nobody, like all the doctors who we talked to were like, no, just you need to try for a year, blah, blah, blah. But we would have wasted so much time because we would have been figuring it out now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's almost a year later.
Yeah, and I just want to cut in and say, like, for the men out there who, you know, and I've heard stories where the woman in you know, in the relationship is saying, hey, I want to just get your semen, you know, analyzed or go get a semen analysis. And the guy's like very adamantly against it. I'm telling you, and this is from, you know, obviously a man to another man, if a man's listening to this, you need to get it tested. And I, you know, for real, this isn't a joke or anything. Like I would strongly suggest getting it because I'm telling you, you think, and if, you know, everything could be a-okay. I mean, when you get the, you know, semen analysis, you'd be, you know, completely normal or whatever, you know, however you want to describe it. But from, you know, cause we did mention this before in the first episode, at least I'm pretty sure we did, where we took some at-home test, mm-hmm. and it came out where it was less than 20 million or something like that, where
mm-hmm.
we had the mindset of, oh, well, maybe I have like 10 million or something like that. But when you get the semen analysis, it's going to be a lot more detailed and, you know, you're going to get those results. It's going to be about as accurate as you can possibly get.
That's why I would say don't even bother with the home test, because the home test was like $50. It wasn't cheap. So you might as well just spend the extra money and do the actual like detailed test, because sperm count isn't everything. It's also the motility,
right,
and the morphology, which I'll get into. So whenever you get the semen analysis back, you're going to want to look at a couple of things. You're going to want to look at the motility and the amount. And that is kind of like something that you can start with. For us, obviously, it was 0, which was really surprising.
Yeah, it was me.
But if your sperm count is under 10 million, then obviously, then there's a problem. I think they said now under 15 million is abnormal, and above 15 million is okay. And then if you have a sperm count above 15 million, then I would say don't worry too much about it. Just try. Maybe you can just do the trying for a year thing. And then if it doesn't work, then you can move to an IUI, which is basically where they, you know, they induce a cycle on the woman to produce more eggs. And then they basically inject the sperm up into her while she's ovulating. So there's a higher chance that that the sperm can meet the egg. But there's also motility, which is basically how well the sperm can swim. So the sperm motility should be at least 60 to 80% motile. So if it's below that, then you may have a problem. Also, the sperm's morphology, which is basically the shape of the sperm. So sperm motility, which is the ability to move rapidly, should be at least 60 to 80% actively moving. And the other factor is sperm morphology, or the sperm's shape and size. That should be at least 70 to 90% normal shaped. So if those results are lower than that, then you may have some decreased fertility. And also I read just now that apparently the normal amount of sperm count is 50 to 200 million. But I have seen on those tests saying that like you can still get pregnant naturally between 15 million and 20 million. So no need to move on to like artificial insemination at that point unless you have been trying for a long time and it's not working. So I guess the next step would be if you find out that you do have zero sperm, which apparently is 1% of men with infertility, then I guess the next step would be to get some blood tests. Because I remember after that happened to us, we were like, we have no idea what to do now. Like, what do we even do?
Yeah, weren't we thinking it was genetic or something like that? It was a possibility.
Yeah. But we ended up going, well, we recommend that if you get that test, then you need to find a fertility specialist or a reproductive urologist. Either one of those types of doctors can order the right test for you. So the tests you want to get are a bunch of different blood tests. Let me find the paper. So many papers. That's one thing you'll learn. Yeah, you're going to have so many papers if you're going through infertility. Yeah, so one of the main ones that you would want to test is testosterone levels. If it's between... well, okay. It says normal amount is between 264 and 916. But I would say if it's like below 400, then you may have a problem because that's pretty low.
Right.
The normal amount is around 500.
I mean, obviously the lower the testosterone, it's probably not good, right? I mean,
yeah, well, testosterone is like...
In men, I guess.
It's very crucial to sperm production. Yeah. So the other ones that you want to get for the blood tests is LH, FSH, prolactin, estradiol, insulin, and sex hormone binding globulin serum. Jeez.
It's a long name.
So one indication that you may have non-obstructive osteospermia, which is basically you have a production problem, is if you have either low testosterone or if you have high FSH and high LH. Those, if your hormones are off, it means that something isn't being produced right, either in the testicles or what is that thing called? Now I'm forgetting the name.
Well, I was going to say that the reason why it's higher is because it's basically like your body's working extra hard than it's, you know, than it's normally supposed to be. So it's almost as if it's working overtime.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it, but it's the thing that's in your brain that tells you to have the signal to make those hormones. I can't remember the name. I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't remember it. Both men and women have it. I just blanked.
I'm sure we'll remember once we're done.
Yeah, probably. Another thing they might make you do is get a testicular ultrasound, just to see if you have any like blockages or visible problems within your testicles. Mm-hmm. So maybe you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I guess for me, it was like the varicocele, vein, I think. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you know, we're going to kind of get a little graphic. So I just want to, you know, have that warning out of the way. Men, when you do your examination yourself and you're kind of looking at your testicle, or both testicles, I should say, you should look at how it's shaped, because it's supposed to be smooth, I guess, you know. I mean, obviously how a testicle is supposed to look, I don't, you know, but if it looks like it's really kind of more bumpy, like you feel like there's, I guess like bean type shaped stuff on your testicle or whatever like that, then there's probably something going on there that's, you know, it's not, I mean, obviously if you feel bumps around there, that's probably not a good sign. You know, it's the same thing with women. If you feel bumps, you know, in the breast, it's probably not good, right? So it's kind of the same with a testicle.
Yeah. There's, I mean, they want to also normally rule out testicular cancer. And if you have lumps, then that would be an indication of that. But as far as like a varicocele, at the top of the testicle, if it's kind of, I don't know how to explain it, like kind of veiny looking, but like, I'm not sure how to explain
like veins are. It's almost as like the veins trying to pop out in a way. Like it's not supposed to be that.
Like if you like, it looks kind of like if there was something that's not smooth underneath the surface.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
And
apparently it's very common, and yeah, usually it doesn't affect fertility. But if you are having fertility issues, then that's usually one of the things that they recommend fixing, because with a varicocele vein, it can, what it basically means is there's extra veins that are, the blood is moving the wrong way.
Yeah.
And it can heat up the testicle, which can kill the sperm before they're able to come out.
Yeah. And I just want to say a couple of things just kind of in my experience and, you know, how I was kind of going through it. For me, it was just it was like a dulling pain, and it would just be constant. You know, I would be sitting down in a certain way or just kind of just how I was positioned and how, you know, whatever I was sitting or anything like that, it would just be that just this constant dulling pain. And if anyone, if any man is out there kind of experiencing the same similar type of feeling down there where it's just, because it shouldn't be hurting all the time, you know, even if it's not a varicocele, it shouldn't be hurting, you know, as often as it was for me. So if you're hurting down there, as, you know, in testicles, then definitely get it checked or examined somehow. And then the other thing that I wanted to say was when you were talking about how it would heat up the testicle, I was always under the assumption that if the testicles were warm or hot, then that was fine. Like I had no idea that it has to be cool or anything like that. That was news to me. My head exploded when I heard that type of stuff. I was like, what? Yeah. So for some reason, I was always under the impression that it was the opposite. I don't know why. But.
Well, if you think about it, that's why the testicles are outside of the body, because they're trying to keep it cool.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I always, because, you know, you have like underwear on, you always have to protect it. So, of course, it's going to get warm and, you know, not that great, you know, in terms of sweating and all that stuff. But I didn't know it was naturally, it's supposed to be more, you know, more cool, you know. So, I don't know.
Yep.
That's just how I always thought it was going to be like that. I don't know.
If you have cool balls, then you have a better chance of having better fertility.
Right.
So, men, don't go into too many hot tubs.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess that's kind of that, because depending on your results with those blood tests and the ultrasound and everything, they may recommend that you do a biopsy, if they find that they can't really diagnose you, which we will talk about in another episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to kind of move on to the women's side, because a lot of women have asked me before what tests should I ask for at the doctor. And there is actually a way around it too. If the doctor won't give you these tests, there's something called Modern Fertility, which is like an online program where you can buy a kit and you can send in blood samples and they will give you the results that you want. Most of these what do you call it? HSA. Yeah. Most of the HSAs, if you have an HSA with your insurance company, will cover modern fertility as a medical expense. But it won't, I don't think it's covered under insurance though. So you would have to pay out of pocket. But if you just want a peace of mind, I think it's worth it. I think it was like a couple hundred dollars, not too much, but cheaper than going to a lab and ordering each of these tests individually.
Yeah.
Cause that would end up being a couple thousand dollars.
Right.
So the one thing about it though, was cause I had to do that because my OB wouldn't order these tests. Right. But they make you prick your finger and then you have to drop the blood onto this card.
Oh yeah, I remember this. Okay, yeah.
And that part like freaked me out. I'm not good with blood. I'm not good with people taking my blood.
Yeah, anytime she gets a shot, it's almost as if like she's gonna die or something like that.
Well, you mean when people are taking my blood.
Right.
I'm okay with shots.
Oh.
Because I can like I've done 34 shots on myself now. I think I'm good with shots.
Yeah, I guess what yeah, that's what I know with your when someone's taking your blood,
Yeah, and they make you prick your finger. So I had to prick my finger and wait for the blood to drop onto the card. That was probably like the worst moment of my life. other than the time during my egg retrieval that they tried to insert the catheter thing into my vein without numbing. That was just, I don't know. That was like a nightmare. Anyway, back to the tests. So the tests that you should order are your AMH, which will tell you pretty much your egg reserve. If you're between, I think it's 2 and 13, then you're considered okay. 13, like obviously anything over 5 is considered kind of high and may indicate PCOS because sometimes your AMH may be higher if you have PCOS. But as long as you're in the normal range of whatever they, the lab tells you to, then for your age range, because that's another thing, depending on your age, your AMH level will be different. So, it's really important to check that because if you have, if like, let's say you're under 30 and you have a diminished, AMH level, then you know, right away that you may run into problems with egg quality or egg quantity because that basically means you have a diminished reserve. So kind of sucks because I mean, it's kind of the same as having a low sperm count in a way because you can improve your AMH through diet and lifestyle changes, but the egg quality for sure is more important than quantity, despite what people may tell you online. The quantity is a lot more important because if you go through IVF and get 40 eggs and all 40 eggs are bad quality, you're gonna end up with no viable embryos anyway. But if you come out with, I don't know, 7 good eggs and they all fertilize or most of them fertilize, then just, yeah, it makes more of a difference for quality. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, so the other ones that you want to get is estradiol, FSH, LH, prolactin, TSH, and testosterone. So I don't know too much about the other ones because I came up with normal levels for each of those, but I do know that your FSH and your LH will be different depending on the day of your cycle. That's why they normally do labs on the third day of your cycle, because that's when they can kind of gauge if you're normal for that part of your cycle. Mostly because, like I said earlier, LH will surge during a certain part of your cycle. So if you're going to take it, it has to be in the beginning of the cycle to see if it's normal. With prolactin, it's a hormone that you normally make a lot of when you're breastfeeding, which can also keep you from becoming pregnant again. So it's kind of like a natural birth control after you get pregnant because you're already nursing a baby. Mm-hmm. But if you're I mean, obviously, if you're not nursing a baby and you have high prolactin, then that could be a concern with fertility because obviously it will block you from being able to be pregnant. And yeah, TSH has to do with your thyroid. And a lot of the times an indicator of that can be like hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's, things like that. And you, like, if you have a thyroid problem, you probably would already know about it because you'd have to try to manage it in your day-to-day life, like be on medication and stuff, but still good to test to make sure that you're in the normal range for getting pregnant. And then the last one that's really important is testosterone, because if you have a high testosterone, then it may indicate PCOS, especially if you don't ovulate, because if your testosterone is too high, it can cause anovulatory cycles, and you may have to be on something to lower that. And there was like a couple medications that, because at one point my what do you call them, like my androgens, or it wasn't the testosterone, but it was androgens, which is a type of, or testosterone is a type of androgen, which is a male hormone. My androgens were slightly high at one point, and they had recommended that I get on spironolactone, which I don't know. Like, I told them I wanted to become pregnant, and spironolactone is not safe for becoming pregnant. But anyway, there's natural ways to lower your androgens or testosterone. One of them is drinking spearmint tea every day. It actually works because that's how I got mine down. But yeah, that's a good indicator if you could get pregnant or not, because you need a normal testosterone level to have a normal cycle.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a lot of information, especially, because I didn't really know a whole lot about that. So I don't know, it's funny because you learn about all these, about your hormones and how something very slight in terms of, going up and down can change things in your body, and kind of looking at the results, mainly for, when I was looking at mine, of course, because that's kind of what I was looking at mainly, just seeing how, my testosterone being where it's at, and then it was the FSH, right? That was higher than it was supposed to be.
If you have high FSH and normal testosterone, that can indicate primary testicular failure. Mm-hmm. Wow, I can't talk. But it also could be Sertoli-Only syndrome. So that's why we needed the biopsy to determine that. But yeah, I feel like there was something else. Oh yeah, I remember now. So one of the other things that they will test for before you do a biopsy, for the men, is they will test to see if you have a Y chromosome deletion or extra X chromosome. Because if you have any of those, then that can be a cause of azoospermia, where it's very unlikely if you have a microtessy to find any sperm doing that. So if you do those genetic testing before you do the microtessy or the biopsy, then it's good because that you won't be, cut up unnecessarily. Right. And for us, he came back normal in both of them. But basically, when you have the extra X chromosome, it means that, I'm not really sure how to explain this, but it's kind of like you have some female aspects to you. You're still male. Yeah. Don't get that messed up, because you still have a Y chromosome.
Right.
But you have some extra chromosome, which can cause you, like, some of the descriptions were weird. Like, they said that sometimes you can grow man boobs, or like you can be shorter than usual or really tall but skinny. So it was just like, okay, that's, I don't know what to do with that information.
Yeah, because for a man, you're supposed to be XX, right? And then a woman, XY.
So, other way around.
Oh, the other way around. Oops. Yeah. So,
XX is a woman.
Okay, so, okay, yeah. So, for if a man was XY, but then they're X, XY or XYY or how, I don't know.
It's you have an extra X chromosome, extra X. Okay. Which makes you slightly more feminine. Although sometimes I looked up that syndrome. I think it's called Kilfinger's syndrome. Kilfinger's syndrome. And some of the men look totally normal. So I'm not sure really.
I mean, if it makes probably, a difference. Probably that your appearance, it probably be too much of a difference, but just, I guess your genetics, you have more female traits than you're supposed to. I'm not really sure how that works out, but you know, and again, it kind of like we were saying before, when you kind of look at all the stuff about when you get your blood test done and all that, and they also will check out about extra X chromosome or whatever, your genetics can play a huge part in this, because if we found out that I did have the extra X chromosome, then that would kind of, I guess, give us some indicator that, oh, well, yeah, then it's a genetic thing. But for me, when it came back normal, now we're kind of thinking, well, what else is it?
You're lost in the dark.
Yeah, that was one of the things that we were thinking, oh, maybe it's possibly I have an extra X chromosome or whatever.
Or a Y chromosome deletion, which I wanted to talk about.
Right.
So if you have a Y chromosome deletion, it means that you don't have, like, usually... Okay, there's three types. There's A, B, and C. I'm not really sure what the difference is, but I know that for most of those, I think only if you have Y chromosome deletion B, then you have a chance of producing sperm, but the other two don't. So then you would know for sure that, okay, I shouldn't do a microtest C because I literally just took a test that says I don't make sperm.
Yeah.
So the Y chromosome deletion is a good indicator of whether you should get a biopsy or not. And even when we spoke to one of the doctors about having the Y chromosome deletion and having fertilized eggs, they always said that like every one of their patients ended in a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. So they did not recommend going that path. So I guess it's good to know. And we know some people who have had that and they ended up not finding anything in the microtesty as well.
Right. Yeah, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying before about getting tested. You know, we wouldn't have known any of this if we didn't go, you know, we were just still trying to do it the normal way, I guess. You know, if we hadn't known all this, because now knowing this, it really kind of gives us more information, more to work, more to go off of, and more things to kind of, I guess, look more into, I suppose, you know, because if you're not, because I know there's men out there who are going to be listening to this and they don't want to be tested at all because they're still in that mindset of, we'll just, you know, we'll have sex regular and I'm sure it'll happen eventually.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't hurt because, you know, if your partner is telling you, well, I really want you to get tested because I want to know, then, you know, do it for your partner. But it really should come down to you should want to do it because, you know, this is, you know, your relationship and it's your, you know, it's your manhood basically. And because what if down the road it's, you know, 5 years later, 10 years later, whatever, and you're still not, you have no kids yet and you're partner is just thinking, well, I don't know what's going on, or they're just so adamant, like, okay, well, I've gotten tested and I know of these things, but I really want to get you tested because then we can combine them and see what we can do in terms of what the next steps are, because it's just not happening the normal way or something's happening. I don't know what's going on. So I'm really adamant in this episode. If there's anything that you should take out of this episode, other than all the information that has been given to you in terms of what you should look for when you get the test results back and what's some important things that you need to kind of remember and all that. For me, if I were to say what's the most important thing that you should get out of this episode, it's that you should get tested, get a semen analysis and get it as soon as possible. And I mean, that's just, you know, me, I guess.
Yeah, and even I've heard like single men talking about it too. Like,
yeah,
there's this YouTuber, I can't remember his name. I think his YouTube name is Yogi Opes or something. But he was talking about how he was a single guy when he got his semen analysis and he found out that his sperm count was low. and his testosterone was, I think his, maybe it was motility. I don't know. Something like that was off. So he was able to say like, okay, well, I know someday I want to be a father.
Right.
So now I have this information and I can kind of prepare myself for in the future to, you know, be healthy enough. Cause you know, like if you're not, if you have any type of infertility that's not, you know, genetic related or something, if it's like a hormone issue that can be corrected, then you're not at your healthiest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's people who have, like there's women who have PCOS or endometriosis, and there's doctors out there who will tell you that the only thing you can do is get on birth control and that's the only way to fix it, but it's actually just a band-aid. If you really want to fix problems like that, you need to work with somebody who will help you change certain things in your lifestyle to fit your specific situation, whether that's like diet or exercise or just lifestyle changes. Because I know there are people who have, like, it never goes away, but they have managed it to the point where they're living normally. And I think that that's important, especially with, like, another thing that people don't realize is if you have low testosterone, that's going to affect you in every way of your life.
Yeah, especially as you get older.
Yeah, the longer that you go with dropping testosterone levels or a low testosterone levels, you're going to be unmotivated. You're more likely to get depressed.
Yeah.
You're also more likely to get Alzheimer's when you get old. So there's like serious things that you need to consider when you're just testing in general for this kind of stuff, because your fertility is a sign of health.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I wish like the health community would get, because they act like it's like some sort of extra thing that you're just supposed to have. Yeah. Meanwhile, there's 1 in 8 couples who have infertility. And I'm sure there's even more people who are not even, you know, they're younger and they're not trying or they don't want kids or whatever, but they have infertility problems. But they're just, you know, brushed off as, well, you know, just go on birth control and deal with it or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Sex, you know, people just, I guess, brush it off, whatever, is just, you know, something that, I don't know, shouldn't be talked about, I guess. I mean, and obviously sex is obviously about as private as you can possibly get in terms of what you do, you know, in life or whatever. But if you're having problems and all that, then you shouldn't be afraid of, I mean, we're doing the podcast specifically because, you know, we're being open about it and we want other people to kind of, you know, be helped, I guess, as well in terms of them going through the journey and all that stuff. And, you know, we're being vulnerable about all of this, you know, because I mean, we could have just decided, eh, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to, you know, I'm too prideful. I don't want people to know about my manhood problems and all that stuff, you know, could have kept quiet about it. But I, especially going through all of this and hearing other people talking about it and all that, it's really helped in terms of my mental state and where I'm at right now in our journey, because when we started to where I am right now, it's like, I'm a completely different person, you know? Yeah. And so getting tested is just that first step of kind of understanding who you are and what you're going to be doing and how you're going to start a family and everything. Because, you know, the way I look at it too, is that, you know, like you're saying, you know, what I have is like 1% of the men who are infertile or whatever.
Yeah. And then your actual syndrome that you had, which was diagnosed through the biopsy, is 1% of those people. So you're like 1% of 1%.
Yeah. So I kind of just joke and I'd say, well, I'm like super unique. I'm like, you know, some kind of alien or something like that. And I'm not saying that in terms of, you know, being demeaning or anything like that. I just kind of look at it as, wow, I'm like unique, like super unique. And just because there aren't a whole lot of people like me that have this type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of look at it like that as like a positive. And that's something that you're going to, I think that's another thing that we can maybe talk about too in a future episode. It's just kind of take, because, you know, when you learn about all this stuff, it's not good. You know, at the beginning, you're just like, man, I can't believe that I'm this and that or whatever. But you kind of have to look at it as a positive and just be like, well, you know, I'm unique and I have this syndrome or whatever. And it just makes me more of an interesting person, I guess.
Yeah. Know? And not everybody's journey will be the same.
Right.
I mean, I guess we'll talk about that in another episode. But one other thing I wanted to say about testing is I know, especially for women, when we want to get pregnant, then we start getting anxious about it, or at least some of us do. And because you're like, okay, I want to be pregnant now. Like, I want my plans to go how they are supposed to go. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, every time, even if you're completely healthy, like both partners are completely healthy and you have sex in your fertile window, you still only got a 33% chance of getting pregnant. And that's like if you're both healthy and of a normal age or whatever. So
yeah, that's a misconception too. It's just, oh, if you have sex, then, you know, you do the thing and you're done, you finish. Okay, well, you're going to get pregnant now.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's that window of you know, obviously there's when you're ovulating, obviously there's a bigger chance of you getting pregnant than when you're not ovulating, but still.
Yeah. Cause you only hear about people getting accidentally pregnant and all that, but,
it's probably when they're ovulating. They just didn't, you know, think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. A lot of people don't even know when they're ovulating or they don't know the difference.
And that kind of goes along with you tracking your cycle, because then you'll know that type of thing. Cause I don't know all that stuff like you do in terms of that. Cause I mean, obviously that's your body and all that, but when I kind of look at it and you show me the chart and it's just like, wow, you can kind of be like, okay, so in this week, that's probably when I'm going to get my period. And in this week, it's probably when I'm going to ovulate. So it's kind of, you can kind of like, you know, and obviously for couples and, you know, having a sex life is very important. You know, you can kind of, oh, well, we can kind of plan out how we're going to do the, you know, do stuff or whatever, like, you know?
Yeah. And once you start cycle tracking, one of the things that's interesting is you start noticing different things about yourself because you're like, okay, now I know for sure when I'm going to ovulate, because I know that my cervical mucus is getting more watery or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you can know, like, some of the things that are crazy that people were talking about in the fertility circles are, did you know that women are more likely to take pictures of themselves when they're ovulating? Because you look better, because your body wants you to look good. Because you're now either you want your body wants you to reproduce.
I'm ready for you. Let's go.
Yeah. So you naturally do look prettier when you're ovulating, which is why you're more likely to be like, hey, I look good in that picture. I think I'm going to take more pictures. And I found that that's true, because when I looked back through my camera roll, I'm like, wait a minute. These dates are all lining up with when I ovulated.
Yeah.
But, one thing that's good about testing, just to bring it back around, what I was going to say before, is like women get anxious about getting pregnant if it's not happening the first month or the second month. But if you get too,
like discouraged or something like
that. What do you call it? If you get, I guess discouraged, or you get too weird about it, where you're making sex weird, you know, like, okay, awkward. we need to do it now because I'm ovulating, and then the guy's like, I'm tired, or
too,
like,
forceful or something like that.
Yeah, if you start making it into a chore where you're like, okay, we have to have sex on this day, and it has to be done, because I know, like, there's some, like, certain techniques that they talk about in fertility circles where they're like, well, like, if you do this certain position or something, or if you do it for this amount of time, or if you do a headstand, then you're more likely to get pregnant. And then you just can get way too sucked into that world of like, okay, I need to do everything right so that I have a higher chance of getting pregnant.
Yeah. Well, it'll basically, like you're saying, it'll make sex like a chore and it won't be fun anymore.
Yeah. And we never experienced it because we got tested so early, but I've heard so many stories of relationships being ruined or strained because their sex life just got so awkward because they were basically having sex just to reproduce. And that's not how it's supposed to be.
Now I'm like picturing that. I was like, okay, like, you know, you're having sex and that's all you're thinking about is, okay, we're gonna have a baby. We're gonna do it. And then everyone's all like, okay.
You get so stressed out that you're like, this is not even fun anymore.
Yeah.
Sex is supposed to be a bonding experience.
The ultimate.
And it's supposed to be, supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be a chore.
Right.
But I've seen so many couples who are going, like, some of them are not even going through infertility, but they're just trying, because sometimes it really does take a year if you're both fine.
Yeah.
But they turn it into this thing where it's like not fun anymore. And then usually the guy is like avoiding sex because they're like, okay, I don't want to deal with you anymore.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's the first step of, you know, the relationship deteriorating. And then, you know, than the guys looking like, oh, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And I want to get, break this relationship off, whatever. And then the whole thing just completely explodes and just, it's not a good situation.
Yeah. I've been in so many fertility, like online fertility Facebook groups or whatever, when we were first starting out, and the women are like, how can I get my guy to have sex with me on these certain days? He's mad at me or whatever.
Well, like, and kind of what I was saying before about when you were showing me your chart and saying, oh, you know, we can kind of plan, because you, it doesn't have to be on specific days, or, I mean, maybe it is, I don't know, but just, it shouldn't even just be like, you know, not, because what if it was like on a calendar, you put out on the calendar and say, okay, we're going to have sex the 28th of such and
there
such.
There are some crazy people who do that, which, I mean, I guess that would make sense if you really are like super busy and that's not weird for you. But if you're like timing it down to like, okay, I'm going to ovulate in 24 hours, we have to have sex at this time or whatever, then that's a little weird. And I think one thing, like, this is my point. That was a really long winded.
Yeah. Sorry.
Anyway. So my point is, if you get tested early and you know that you're normal, then that takes the stress off of it. And if you know that you have a problem, then it also takes the stress off of it, because you're like, oh, well, I guess we don't have to try anymore because we're going to go through fertility treatments or whatever, or we're going to improve our fertility by doing whatever else that you need to do. And that kind of takes the stress out of it, because you're not like, there's less unknowns, where you're like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get pregnant this month unless we have sex on this certain day and I eat this certain food at this certain time. So if you get tested, then it kind of takes the stress out of it. So that's another good reason to just get it out of the way.
Yeah. So I guess the main things that we want to say and you to get out of is test early, and especially for the men, test early, you know, or as soon as possible. Like that's what I would say. And, you know, don't let sex become a chore if that's, you know, like you were saying, and how most relationships, at least, you know, I hope, you know, when sex is put, like you were saying, it's supposed to be that ultimate bonding experience and it's supposed to be fun. If it becomes a chore, then it's not fun anymore, you know? So.
Yeah. And if you get tested and you find out that everything's normal and you've been trying, and then you end up trying for a long time, then just keep like updating your doctor about it. And sometimes, and it's weird, 'cause I know somebody who went through IVF because they had unexplained infertility, meaning that all their tests came back normal. Hmm. Like he had a high sperm count and she was perfectly fine, had normal cycles or whatever. They went through IVF, got a baby, then she randomly got pregnant later on because they just didn't want to wait, I guess.
Yeah.
I can understand that though, because sometimes it's stressful waiting. Especially when you don't know what's going on. But yeah.
Yeah. Sorry that went a little longer than I thought, but we kind of went into some tangents and I guess some detours along the way, what we were trying to talk about. But
yeah, hopefully that wasn't too all over the place.
Yeah. But yeah, so get tested. And I know it sounds kind of weird. Get tested.
Get tested. What, for STDs? Yeah. Actually, they do test you for STDs because sometimes that can cause infertility.
Mm. There you go.
Yep.
So, yeah, again, like we said over at the beginning of the episode, if you do want to reach out to us and tell us about your story and all that stuff, then you know, you can email us or you can message us in one of our Instagram pages or the podcast Instagram page. And again, all those links will be in the description. And, you know, don't be afraid to let us know and to be open about it, because, I mean, you know, we're doing this to help others. So, and I guess as well, we're helping ourselves, because kind of us talking about out in the open to each other, I think it's really helping out as well.
Yeah. And we're kind of documenting everything that's going on. Yep. So, but I mean, we've listened to other people's podcasts about this, the few that are out there, and it's really helped.
Yeah, so we just wanted to, I guess, put our hand at the table.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's it. And we will see you in the next episode.
Bye.